Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up a deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
And welcome to another show from the 2009 World Series of Poker. We are back in the Dennis Phillips Suite high atop the Rio, where 21 floors below us, the main event has gotten underway and is already up to day 2A. And Dennis Phillips and Joe, the poker coach McGowan, are here with me today, both survivors of day 1C. Both of you guys have survived into that second day. Congratulations on making day 2. And how has your main event experience been thus far, Dennis?
Oh, it's been awesome. Showed up there for day 1, and I don't know how many. There had to be 40 or 50 other people out there wearing the red hats and the white shirts, and they were right over there. I happened to be on the rail with my seat. They were over there just doing the stuff that I'm not used to, the signing the autographs, all the rest of these cheering me on. They had the truck horn there.
Yeah.
The one guy was sitting right behind the rail, and the guy with the truck horn was 2 feet behind him. And I went ahead, and he blasted, and this guy went through the roof. It was unreal.
I love it.
He turns around and says, "Warn me next time."
It was great to see the Philippians, as we call them, mm-hmm. who showed up en masse last November when you were part of the November 9 at the final table, to show up again to root you on. And I think we may have gotten a little bit of coverage because I saw the ESPN cameras turn towards us as we all marched in there towards your table. Yeah. It was terrific to be there. Joe was at a separate table, although ironically you two ended up at the same table later on when they got moved, and we'll get to that in just a second. But Joe, tell me about your experience being back in the World Series of Poker. This is what, your fourth or fifth year playing in it?
I think it's my fourth.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth. Well, my day's funny because compared to Dennis, we had polar opposites. You know, my table was... I almost didn't want to sit down when I got to my table. It wasn't Phil Ivey and, you know, Jesus Ferguson and, you know, players like that. But it was all of the kind of – and I don't want to belittle these people because I thought they were great players, but they were very well-known pros, every single player at my table. And
wow.
I'm going to my table, oh, this is horrible. I'm looking for the guy in a Hawaiian shirt, the other guy with flip-flops, and the guy that doesn't know where the dealer button is that I've had in years past. I'm serious. That's what I was looking for. And then I said, "Dennis, how's your table?" He's like, "Oh, I think it's horrible. I have all idiots that don't know what they're doing. They're terrible."
Dennis did not say they were idiots.
Okay, I said that. That's how I that's how I interpreted it.
I had no known people at my...
I think he said idiots.
The people at Joe's table, I'll have to admit, these are the people that if you haven't made on TV yet, some of them probably will.
Yeah.
Good quality players, players in waiting, I guess is maybe the way you'd say it.
Mm-hmm.
The quality of ones that, you know, some of them are going to bust out, going to go deep in a tournament, whatever. I had at my table, people from a guy from Italy that couldn't speak any English and, you know, was doing it. I had another guy that kept forgetting to put a chip on his cards to, you know,
protect
him.
Yeah.
You know, so you know what that story means. Not that these were necessarily bad players. They were inexperienced players, and they were unpredictable players.
Right.
So the big difference in our table is my play was a lot of unpredictable play. You didn't know for sure what they were going to do and what they were going to call.
Yeah.
Joe had the other one where you knew what they were going to do, but you also knew they were going to do the right thing, which made his table.
You know,
very
it's
tough.
Interesting you say that because I was there and I was playing in a cash game while you guys were in the main event, and I would come over and I would see how things were going. And at the beginning, I walked over, I looked around your table, talked to you a little bit, then I went over to Joe's table and looked around at his, and he was saying to me, "Oh, I can't believe the draw I got. Look at this. I would much rather be at that table behind us." Because I don't know anybody there. I don't think there are any pros at that table. And I said to him, "My opinion, I think you're better off at this table. Because at your table, the people who are there are going to recognize what's going on, and you'll be able to play with them at the same level. The table behind you, like your table, Dennis, much more of a minefield. Because they're the kind of people who are looking at their cards and the cards on the board. They're not getting tells off of you. They're not reacting to how you're playing physically or how you're wavering your chip count or any of that sort of stuff. I think what Dennis was going through was much more of a minefield than what Joe went through. And by the way, at the end of the day, who had more chips here? Joe, after sitting with the pros, what were you up to, 80?
Well, I got up to over 90, and I was very happy to finish with – 86-6, I think it was.
Oh, I'm tickled to death. Yeah, I had 62-something, and I'm happy as can be.
From starting chips of 30,000, you guys absolutely. Should be thrilled to be where you are going into day 2B.
I think average is 45-ish,
somewhere in that area.
And we played the extra level compared to the first 2 days because they're trying to balance things out. So with an extra 2-hour level, very, very happy.
Let's explain that. On days 1A and 1B, they had very low turnout. And frankly, I think a lot of people were worried that this year's turnout overall wouldn't be anywhere near the numbers that you had last year, Dennis, which was
6,844.
6,844 players. Day 1A had somewhere around 1,100. Day 1B had somewhere around 800, not even 2,000 combined between the two of them.
Close.
1956 for the 2 days, I think.
Okay.
That sounds
close.
Still a fairly low number, but on those 2 days, they only had them play 4 2-hour levels of play.
Right.
When you guys came in, you had almost that many players on your day alone, some 15, 16, 18, 19, whatever it was, and you guys played 5 levels. What's the difference in how you play a longer day like that? Does it affect your day? Does it affect a player's day as they're going through something like that?
Well, it can. It depends upon the particular person or something like that. If you're not used to playing long hours, obviously that last level can be very taxing and tiring for you. I prefer to play the longer levels. Last year when I was playing in the main event, I picked up a ton of money after midnight. I love playing it because people don't even realize it. When they get playing 10, 12, 14 hours, they get to those last couple of levels. They get more predictable in their betting. They get a little more relaxed on it. They're much more readable. Some of them even shut down for the night.
Mm-hmm.
And you know you have no worries about this particular person. He's just surviving for 2 more hours.
Mm-hmm.
So I love going long hours into the night. It helps me out a lot of times.
Now, we should explain that when the people who are coming back for day 2A come back, they are going to play 5 full levels.
Correct.
You guys, when you come back, are going to play 4 full levels.
Correct.
So that whoever gets to day 3, all of those people will be starting on level 10.
Correct.
So
pretty much the same thing.
So it will even out.
It will even out.
Although there were a lot of players at my table, myself slightly being one, and I really believe the World Series has done a great job. It's hard for these people when they don't know if they're going to get 12,000 people or 4,000, and they have to be prepared for everything.
Yes.
So I think they're doing a great job. But Eric Lynch was at my table. Daris, what's his last name? Help me out.
Suharto.
It was one of his coaches,
right.
You know, great guy, great player. And he's saying, look, you know, I ate a certain way. I ate at this time, and I was going to have this, and I did this, and I slept this, and I've been working on my sleeping schedule for this. And I did this for 4 levels.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, geez, you know, I was up at 8 o'clock. That's the earliest I've been up in, like, 2 years. You know, I was playing with my little boy, Aiden. I was doing this. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to go back to sleep. I'm going to stay up because it's just 4 levels, and I'd rather be a little tired in the last level, as nutty as that sounds. I felt I'll be less readable. You know, I won't be as – if I pick up a hand, I won't have to worry what I look like. And then to hear the 5 levels, you know, it's 5, but it's two more hours.
Yes.
And this is a huge event.
Plus a later dinner break. You did it after playing for 6 hours instead of only playing for after 4 hours.
Which is what Eric was thinking with what he ate and all that. And really, when you're into it, you do try to – and we've talked about this on previous shows. You try to – how much you drink and when you drink. You don't want to miss hands. You don't want to miss different things. So it does matter, but in the big picture, I don't think it mattered too much.
Once it got to day 1D, the final day of the opening part of the main event, there was a huge controversy because that day sold out. And there were a lot of people who wanted to play who didn't sign up or try to sign up until a couple of hours before the event was going to start, and they got shut out. Myself included.
And when you say a lot, I think it's over 600, Paul.
Yes, it is. But they sold out at 2,700. And there's a lot of controversy about that, and we're going to get into that. And we're waiting, by the way, on Mike Sexton, who you know from the World Poker Tour, who was working kind of as a player's advocate for those who had not gotten in but wanted to get in. We're hoping he'll join us here in the Dennis Phillips suite, and we'll go into that in depth. So congratulations to both of you on getting to day 2. Before we take the break, though, I want to talk about one other thing from the last few days. Before the main event, you played in what I think is probably one of the most fun events of the year, a great charity event called Ante Up for Africa that Don Cheadle and Annie the Apprentice Duke put together.
Yes.
That was also at the Rio. Tell us about that.
Oh, that was just awesome. Wasn't a whole lot of players in it, a little over 100. I think they had maybe 140, 150 or whatever. But it was a fun event. The line structure was such that it climbed rather rapidly. But to sit down with these guys and then see how just down to earth they are. I got to sit down right across the table from Matt Damon. And I didn't strike up the conversation with him. He struck it up with me. Mm-hmm. We started talking back and forth, and he was asking what it was like, and what the we got into sports. He's a phenomenal sports fan and different things there. He was saying, you know, about the tension, about how what's it like to be the chip leader. Do you really want it? And I'm going, how could you not want it? He says, well, that's sort of like when it comes down to the last 30 seconds of a ball game. Who wants the ball?
Right.
You know, and I'm going, well, yeah, it is, very much so, and I want the ball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and back and forth, and he talked about some of the movies he'd done, the whole bit like that. Great conversations there on it. And then I ran into him and Ben later. They were playing some blackjack.
Ben, look at this, first name basis. Okay. Ben Affleck he's talking about.
Oh, you want to hear the best one?
Yeah.
I'm sitting here talking to these guys. We'd actually gone and eaten at the same restaurant, although different tables, and we'd sent them a bottle of wine. He turned around and sent us a bottle of wine. We were just having some fun. Afterwards, back to the blackjack table. They're playing it. I'm standing there doing it. And all of a sudden, this guy, I had this huge bear hug from behind. Somebody wraps his arms around me, and I feel like I'm about 4 foot two at this image, because I look up and all I see is a tall mountain of a man behind me.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have bruises on my right shoulder. Alrighty.
Who so, was it?
Charles Barkley.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. You
and
know this.
I was there as well, and what Dennis is saying, it's hard to picture it, because I've watched him forever, and I've seen him even now, and I see him play golf. I see him do everything. Unless you saw him in person, of how big he actually is in comparison to what you might think.
Mm-hmm.
He's like times two. He's
mm-hmm.
huge.
Yeah, and I mean, this guy, you know, he's not in you know, basketball shape, but he's still in pretty good shape.
He's still huge.
No
it's,
kid.
It's not like he went from being 6'10 to being 6'3 after he stopped playing.
Yeah, no.
He's
oh
still a huge
gosh.
Guy.
Yeah, this guy, and it, friendly, you know, having fun, right. relaxing. I mean, it was awesome to do it. I played with Brad Garrett for a while. I played with Jason Alexander for a while. All great guys, all having fun, all doing it for a good charity. Nelly, of course, was there. I went down the red carpet with Nelly. Actually, I was drugged down the red carpet with Nelly. All right. They were interviewing Nelly, and I was kind of along there as a shadow, and then he kept pulling me into it, and we were talking. So,
nice.
You know,
yeah,
it
I saw the photo on your website, thechipleader.com.
Yeah. Very much so.
That's terrific.
Me.
Of course, we know Nelly from playing in the poker rooms in St. Louis,
Absolutely.
Where he's joined us many,
Absolutely.
Many times.
You know, and they kept asking me how good of a player is Nelly, and I said, he's too good. He used to lose money. You know, he's learned too quickly.
Now, so. Here's what's fascinating to me about this. I've known Dennis for a while. I knew Dennis before he was the original chip leader last year, before he even came out here to play the main event for the first time last year. It's amazing to me that a year later, you can talk so casually about being at a table with Matt Damon, about getting a bear hug from Charles Barkley, about Ben Affleck being there, yeah. and all of these other people. What a year this has been for you.
It is kind of mind-boggling. But again, you just accept it for what it is. I'm not for sure why I was put in this position, but I'm enjoying the heck out of it. And that's the nice thing about it. Ben Affleck, nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Damon. Nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about sports,
mm-hmm.
just like I would with you or with Joe. These are just down-to-earth, regular guys.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once you get them away from the glitz and not in front of the cameras and a whole bit like that, they just have fun like everybody else.
Yeah, Ben Affleck's a regular guy who's married to Jennifer Garner.
Okay, well, that may be. All right. But I'm telling you, the one thing to be careful of is getting bear hugs from Sir Charles.
There's a little tip for you listeners. Yeah. I do want to ask lasted longer in the Any Up for Africa tournament.
Well, wait a second. Before we even get to that.
Uh-oh, here we go. Here we go.
My experience, because I did play in it as well,
uh-huh.
couldn't have been, I mean, totally different than Dennis. Dennis goes in on the red carpet. Dennis is this, all these pictures. Mine's like, oh, well, you can just go wherever. It doesn't matter.
You go into the service entrance.
I probably did go through the service entrance. Everybody else has, you know, the Any Up for Africa patch here, and this one's going to be here because this is on ESPN. I got nothing. I sit down. Oh, here's your table. There's nobody there. I'm like, oh, maybe I'll get to play with this person or Ben Affleck. Nobody. I had to wait then like a half an hour, and then they worked me into some other spot. And then people are like, well, what are you doing here? I'm like, I'm playing. I paid. I had to take out my thing. I'm like, oh, okay.
See, what happened is they saw you go in the servants' entrance. They're thinking, what's a busboy doing at our table? However,
this is true.
Who went longer?
Well,
Joel last week.
I was hoping I would have my best short stack, you know, deal ever.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis and I made – this is an embarrassing mistake. We got caught up. We go to the little late Aces Lounge during one of the late breaks. We're down to 26 people, something like
Somewhere
that.
Somewhere like that, yeah.
You know, and the money's at 18, which almost everybody gives it back, although I wasn't aware of that, and – I don't know if I would have played, to be honest. I probably would have given something.
Yeah.
I don't mind being generous, but I actually could use the money, quite frankly. I have two small kids, so I don't know what I would have done.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're in the break. I lose a huge hand. I raise with ace-jack, and the blinds go up crazy. It's a charity event. The blinds went up every 12 minutes.
Yeah.
So I don't blame the guy totally for calling me in the small blind with deuces, but whatever. I lose that race, and now I'm down to nothing. I only had 2,000 left, and at that point, the smallest denomination chip is a $500 chip,
mm-hmm.
and everyone else has, you know, 50,000 or something.
It's a 500 ante per hand.
500 ante per hand. We get back, you know, three hands late. I barely get myself in the seat before my last ante chip, the smallest denomination, is gone. I sit down and I win my ante. You know what I mean? And I win. I can only win that amount, but
right.
I can win everybody's ante, and I did.
Wow.
I win that, and then I went on, and I actually chipped up and chipped up and chipped up, and now I'm down to 19.
So you literally were a chip in a chair.
I was a chip in a chair, and I'm saying, wow, this could be like a modern day.
Oh, by the way, well played on that last hand there with the chip. I love the way you played that.
All in by accident.
That was my best hand
no,
I played.
No tell at all for
it. My best hand of the World Series. But it didn't end well for me. I was the bubble boy in the tournament, which I think was my theme for this World Series. I think I had like six where technically, you know, and I think a bubble could be, I might exaggerating because I want to feel bad for myself. You know, if you're in a 3,000 player tournament and they pay the top two, you know, 90 and you come in 330,
mm-hmm.
that feels like a bubble.
Yeah,
you know,
you're, because you're close because you can see the money.
Yeah,
if
you do that. And I definitely had my share and Dennis did as well. Yeah. I guess everybody does, but I've had a lot more this year than in years past.
It still hurts when you play. You go into day two. You had 2,000 people to start with. You end up going out 190, and they pay 180.
Yeah.
You know, that
right.
type stuff. And
right.
We both had a couple of those tournaments. But,
yeah.
You know. But this, I will tell you something. I finally accomplished something in the Ante Up for Africa. For the third time, I was against Barry Greenstein. For the third time, he shoved all in. For the third time, I had more chips than him and called him. And finally, I knocked him out, and I got his signed autograph book.
Congratulations.
I absolutely did. Yep. Barry, a gentleman at all times, and he wrote in there and autographed and wrote about the hand and the whole bit. So it was really, really good.
Barry's book is called Ace on the River.
Yes.
And he
yes.
has a tradition of giving that to the person who knocks him out of any tournament.
It took me three times. The first two times. First time, I was for race. Second time, he had me dominated. This time, I had him dominated.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table coming to you from Las Vegas, where we are covering the main event of the 2009 World Series of Poker. And our thanks to the folks at Lumiere Place. We will be back there, by the way, with a live show 2 weeks from today on the 21st of July. In the meantime, we'll take a break and come back with more coverage of the 40th annual World Series of Poker. This portion of the show brought to you by Poker Stars, and among the Poker Stars pros who are here, Dennis Phillips, Barry Greenstein. I saw Umberto Brenes at Starbucks earlier today, and Joe Hashem's got his own lounge downstairs.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I mean, they're all over the place. You can't throw a stick without hitting a Poker Star. How's that?
And by the way, you kids, stop throwing sticks in the poker room.
But if you can name any of the members of the Team Poker Stars, they're here.
Mm-hmm.
Literally everybody from Vanessa and Chad all the way to Peter and Ivan.
Mm-hmm.
They're all here. They're all playing. They're all doing well. It's just awesome.
And if you want to play against those people yourself, you can go and download the software from PokerStars.net and find the Poker Star in you. We'll take a break and come back with more of the Lumiere Place Final Table. Paul Harris with Dennis Phillips and Joe the Poker Coach McGowan on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
Put on your sunglasses, stack up your chips, and hide those tails.
Yes, he's going all in, and Chan has him. Johnny Chan, the master.
You're at the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
More of our continuing coverage of the 40th annual World Series of Poker. We are in the Dennis Phillips suite high atop the Rio in Las Vegas. And they have completed day 1A, B, C, and D, and are deep into day 2A of the main event. But before they got to day 2A, there was a controversy about how many people were going to be allowed to play in this thing. And Mike Sexton is joining us in the Dennis Phillips suite to talk a little bit about that. Mike, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Thanks for joining us here. Everybody knows Mike from his great work on the World Poker Tour, and let's get the plug in early. Season number 8 is starting when?
It is. Starts July 13th at Bellagio in Las Vegas. And it's a 15,000 buy-in event, and we're excited about it.
All right. Congratulations on the 7 previous seasons of fantastic poker coverage.
Well, yeah. And a quick note, just as a personal thing, yeah, obviously everybody knows this, but I want to make a point of it. You're obviously one of the finest ambassadors of poker in the world, period.
Well, thank you.
The things you do are just phenomenal, and a lot of people don't realize that. The new organization you got with Poker Gives and that's going forward for the charities. If you guys don't know it, you should be privileged to ever make an acquaintance of them like Mike. So, anyhow, let's get back to the serious stuff.
Okay. Speaking of you as an ambassador, you stepped up on day 1D when there was a controversy about how many people were going to be allowed in. Here's what happened, as I understand it, and you fill in any holes that I may have missed. The World Series of Poker had about 1,100 people sign up for 1A, 800 people for 1B, a little under 2,000 for 1C, and then a sellout on day 1D. The question is, what is a sellout? Well, they announced that perhaps they'd be allowing as many as 3,000 people in, but they cut it off at 2,700. That made a lot of people mad who still wanted to get in, who hadn't bothered to sign up, hadn't signed up for any of the earlier days, hadn't pre-registered online, hadn't paid their registrations, and hadn't done anything until just a couple of hours before day 1D was going to begin. That number grew, as I understand it, to some 600 people who still wanted to get in there. But the World Series of Poker would not relent. It would not let them in. From what you've heard, and you have talked to a lot of these people in the last couple of days, what went wrong?
Well, what went wrong was they sold out. I mean, in other words, they filled every seat that they had at every table. Now, when I say every seat, they were playing nine-handed. One of the options, of course, to let another 295 players in would have been to go to 10-handed.
Mm-hmm.
But they made the decision that the players on the first 3 days had only played nine-handed, and that the people that pre-registered for day 1D would be now be penalized and have to play in more crowded conditions, and it wouldn't be fair to them to allow 10-handed tables. So they took the stance, and you have to admire the stance that they took, not to go to 10-handed players, in my mind. Now, there were a couple other options they were considering. The problem that they had was, as soon as the registration was full, they told people early in the morning on day 1D, I'm sorry, we're sold out, you can't play, and sent those people home. Well, obviously several hundred people milled around wanting a better explanation or a possible alternative suggestion how they could get in the tournament. I happened to be walking down the hallway, got surrounded by 30 people real quickly. They said, Mike, you got to do something for us. You got to do something for us. You know, we want to play here. And I'd already played on day 1A. And I'd already gone through to the second day, but you know, I felt the pain of these guys because I know I could have easily been one of them.
I was one of them.
And you were one.
They actually got out of the clipboard and started taking names.
Yeah, and I feel very sorry for players that didn't get in. I really do, especially those that traveled from Europe and Australia
and
faraway places. It cost them a lot of money. It's an unfortunate situation. On the other hand, I went back and represented the players along with Tom Franklin to a private meeting with Jack Eiffel, with Jeffrey Pollack, and with all the brass here at the Rio Casino. All the vice presidents were there.
They were there. And every suit in town was there.
And we just represented the players trying to explain our point of view. Tom, of course, was one that was shut out, and he didn't get in. And I, on the other hand, was a player that was in the tournament and already playing, but still felt it was right to try to get these guys in if possible. I do respect the Rio and the management of the World Series of Poker because they have a difficult situation here. In my mind, they made two big mistakes. One, for the last week or so, in my mind, somebody should have foreseen that this was a possibility.
Yes.
And all they would have had to do is just start telling people three, exactly. 4, 5 days ago, look, we're only taking 2,800 people on Monday, you know, on day 1D. So if you don't sign up, you could get shut out of the main event.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they had to do.
Yep.
They did not do that, you know, and I think they're paying the price for it. You know, and it's unfortunate that those that got shut out are going to create negative publicity for it. And I think it's been the greatest run World Series of Poker in history. Well organized, well run, fantastic job. And I really believe had they, the management I'm talking about, had a decision to do over again, when they immediately got to the freeze-out situation where they had no more seats for players, had they just told those players, look, you know, I'm not saying we're going to try something or do something for sure, but we're going to consider alternatives to try to get you players in and come back at 2 o'clock this afternoon, and we'll give you our decision one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be positive you can get in, but we're going to see if there's any way that we can accommodate the extra players.
Right.
And, you know, basically, I think had they done that, then I do think that they would have started. And the option, incidentally, for the inside info for your show, because I was back at the meeting, the only alternative that they were going to consider was have a 1E that was going to start at 5 or 6 o'clock that night, just play 4 levels on that day, not the 5 levels that the people were actually starting on 1D played.
Mm-hmm.
The condition being that everybody that went through on that day has to come back on Tuesday on day, you know,
2A.
2A to play. And everybody would agree with that, and they could have accommodated players because on day 2A, there's not that many players that went through. They would have had an extra 100 tables, and they could have accommodated the players. So,
right.
You know, and but they just decided it would be worse for them. You know, they know it's going to be bad either side. You know, and unfortunately for them, they think they're going to have a black eye, whatever they would have decided, because the players they sent back at 9 o'clock in the morning, who they sent home, you know, if they hadn't heard about getting back into the tournament until they got back home and heard these players did, they're going to be more upset.
Absolutely.
You know, so they made a stance. And the truth is, for the future of this event and the World Series of Poker, today might have been the best thing to happen to it. You will never, ever have late registration on day 4 again in the history of the World Series of Poker. That's a guarantee.
Why not have alternates? Why not say to the people who were there, okay, you know what? You didn't sign up ahead of time. We're going to take your money. You're going to be an alternate. And as soon as people bust out, because they do, certainly even in two-hour rounds, et cetera, there are going to be people who are going to bust out. Why not say to those people, you'll get to come in later on, which is done in pretty much every other tournament.
Okay. Two reasons that he didn't do that. Number one, had you taken alternates, at some point you're still going to have the same problem where certain players aren't going to get in the event.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so at some point you are going to have to shut it off and shut people out of the tournament. But the bigger problem for them logistically is the fact that on day 2B, you understand, the second day that the players that played on Sunday and Monday, okay, they're going to have a hard time seating players now because they're going to have so many extra players playing on those days, more than 2,800 probably. And they have a serious logistical problem now as to what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is you're now going to have more players that are going to be available because you took all those alternates in, and it's going to create a much bigger problem for them. So I think logistically and organizationally they're going to have problems had they try to do that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, last year they had about 35% of the people knocked out on the day ones. They're actually running at a lower percentage right now. So you're exactly right. Should they find some way to magically get 35 or 3,800 in here on 1D or 1E if they would have done that?
But, Dennis, as you know,
then they're in trouble.
You got all the way to the final table last year in this event, and the truth of the matter is they should have known that when you start players with 30,000 in chips instead of 20,000 in chips, you're not going to lose as many players every
exactly,
day.
Exactly, exactly. It's just logic, common logic.
Well, you know, one of the other things is, too, you know, with what you said, I feel horrible for the players. You know, first, I'm a poker player.
Particularly the ones who came from afar, as Mike said.
Without any question.
I met a guy from Honolulu. He flew in there today, got in this morning to play.
Yeah.
Think of that. He flew all night to get here, and now he's going home without ever playing.
It's terrible. There's so many different scenarios. A guy like Mickey Appleman that's played the main event of the World Series of Poker for 25 straight years, that played virtually every event in this World Series, and then he got shut out in the main event.
Yeah.
You know, a guy that came in this morning at 8 o'clock, he was going to play the tournament at noon, but he stopped by to play a one-table satellite to try to win his $10,000 entry. So he supported the venue by playing a satellite. He got down to third place. He got knocked out. When he went to register, they told him he couldn't play. Had he known that, he would have gone to register earlier and got in, he said.
Yeah.
But nobody ever considered the fact that they might get shut out.
Well,
but
I even got a better one than that. The gentleman who finished 667th last year,
Bubble Boy,
was in the room. He told him a month ago that he was going to play 1D, and they said, well, just come on down there. But nobody ever registered him. He showed up this morning. Oh. He had, for 365 days, an entry into it. And he has no seat.
Yeah, yeah. That may be worse than going out on the bubble.
Yeah.
I am surprised, though, that a lot of these guys got shut out. Because, honestly, I told Josh, you know, the
poker lawyer.
Poker lawyer, if you, because he wanted to play Monday. I said, Josh, if you don't pre-register, you're going to be shut out.
Mm-hmm.
Monday is going to be sold out.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, Joe, are you sure? Are you sure? I'm like, I'm positive.
But do you
this
think
this was five, 6 days ago?
You're absolutely right, because you've had the experience and everything. Other people are going to look and say, they had 800 on Saturday. There's no way.
But I
can
see
out.
The guy from Hawaii that maybe doesn't know, but not to knock the poor guys that didn't get in. But I mean, come
on. Well, I agree. But I think somebody had to foresee the fact that because it was 4th of July weekend,
yes,
people are going to take the weekend off that live here in the States because it's a holiday and just play on Monday. And most of the people that came from California, you know, were going to be home for the weekend and fly in Monday morning to play. And this is the problem. But they should have foreseen this.
Yeah.
To me, it's just simple common sense that all you had to do to protect yourself where you don't have this kind of squabbling and these kind of problems is start saying a week or two ago, look, on day four, we're only taking 2,800 players.
Yep.
So if you don't register on that day, you may get shut out of the main event of the
World
Series.
Can you tell Mike's from the Midwest? Common sense. Here it is, guys. That's it in black and white. Boom.
It is a little tough for the World Series also, though. They have to be prepared. Are we going to completely sell out 3,000, 3,000, 3,000, 3,000? Are we going to get a short turnout? At one point, 2 days ago, my over-under would have been 5,500.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure that it was actually going to then sell out. I was kind of backtracking a little bit.
By the way, speaking of over-unders.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
2 months ago on this show, I asked Dennis to set a number. We were going to have a little over-under bet. I said, Dennis, you played last year with 68-44. Give me an over-under for this year. Dennis
said... Wait. Mike, who do you think won the over-under bet?
I know a lot of guys that bet that over and under. The same prop exactly, more than last year. And because they turned players away...
Right.
The guys that bet the under win the bet.
Yeah. There you go. That's exactly it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's why Dennis should be more upset about this, because he said 7,011, and I think that they couldn't have gotten to that unless they had let me and the rest of the guys in today. So I win the bet, but I don't get to be in the main
event.
Oh,
they're going to have like 6,500 it's going to be at this year. Right. That's the max.
Something like that.
What a tough deal, though, for them. I mean, it could have been 9,000, and they have to be prepared with the dealers and the tables, and it's a really tough thing.
I mean,
it's unfortunate, but put yourself in the position of the organizers.
That's what I'm trying to do.
Of the people that run the World Series of Poker.
Yeah.
We're players, and obviously, they don't really want to shut anybody out of the World Series of Poker. You know that. They want as many people to play as possible.
They make money off of their mind.
They've sold out 7 other events during this World Series of Poker, you know, and even though they said, you know, we're not shutting anybody out of the main event or something like that, you know, which is what some players are claiming. You know, they should have foreseen the possibility that this was going to be a sellout, you know, in my mind, and at least just started making announcements. Whether it gets to that number or not is irrelevant, but at least you prepared yourself for if this case scenario would come up like it did. And I feel very bad for them because I think they've done a wonderful job here, and I think they had a tough decision to make, and I think that they're looking at the future of the event as well as just not satisfying these players, but they know they will never, ever have another problem with registration in the main event again.
How about 2 years ago, the cards? You remember the cards with the little funny numbers, and they were angled sideways, and they had craps dealers dealing, you know, the poker tournaments, and it was horrible. I mean, stuff was really unorganized. It wasn't that great. This year is so much better than the end of the year. And like Mike's saying, it's going to be even better next year.
Right.
And it keeps getting better. So.
How was your World Series of Poker? We know you made it to day two. Where are you in chips?
I've actually got 41,000 in chips, which was average for the day that I played. So I was happy to get through with average chips. I was actually on low chips most all the day. I was down to 12,000 a couple times. So I was very happy to finish with 41,000.
And you played one less level than like Joe and I did.
Yes, I did. Yeah. Right.
How was your table draw?
And... I haven't even looked at my table draw.
No, I mean on day 1A.
On day 1, I was happy with it. I mean, you know, there were a couple good players on there. But overall-wise, you know, I really believe this, that the main event of the World Series of Poker really is much weaker than any other event during the World Series of Poker. You know, it's ironic because there's so many satellite winners and so many online qualifiers that they just don't have the experience, you know, and they've just got a seat. And, you know, it's the kind of players you like to play with. I really believe the quality of play on day 1 of the World Series of Poker is less than any other day. Now, once you get to day 3 and day 4 and day 5 and all the cream starts rising to the top, it's going to be much tougher to get through another day of the World Series of Poker. But in truth, I was happy. I'd be happy to draw that table again next year.
I tell you what, I played several different events, and at every event, I would the first table I sit down, I'd recognize somebody or, you know, played against them before. I sat down with 8 other people I had never seen before. So you're absolutely right. And the quality of play wasn't quite up like the 5K or some of the others that I played. I agree with you 100%. It also was a lot more deadly because you didn't know how they were going to play. I saw some horrible calls that ended up winning the pot. But, you know, that's typical of the main event.
More minefields in the field.
Mike, what's a good table for you? I like, you know, 3 solid players at the table, 3 bad, horrible players, kind of reckless, really not, you know, too sure of themselves and giving money away. And then, like, you know, a different grouping of players to where there's a balance.
Yeah.
So some players
Joe fit in on this.
Some players, you know, some players want like all good players because they can outplay him. They can do reverse tells. And,
I well, want all bad players at my
do
table.
Do you want all the bad players?
Yes,
like,
I do.
Some people feel that's horrible.
Just
we've
give me
about
eight reckless,
earlier.
Abandoned players, and I'll take my chances.
You don't that. Consider that to be some
No, it is a minefield, but you have a chance to get a hold of a lot of chips. And, you know, people that are playing reckless and, you know, sort of carefree are the kind of people that you want to play against. It's just like if you're playing in a regular poker game, a home game, a cash game, you know. If a guy's playing every single pot, that's the guy that you want to play against.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to play against a rock that doesn't play a hand but once every 2 hours because you know he's got ace or kings if he plays a hand. So, obviously, you know, the more aggressive players are more dangerous. You have a chance to get busted, but you also have a chance to get chips, and those are the guys that you want
more
to play.
More dangerous because you're forced to gamble with them a little
you're
bit?
You're forced to because you have to make big decisions for a lot of money with marginal style
right.
hands because
right.
you know they're reckless and they're going to bet a lot of weak hands as well as, you know, in case they have a strong hand. And you just got to hope you pick the time they don't have a strong hand. And most of the time, they don't. They have weak hands.
Right.
While we're talking about the main event, I've got to ask you about another great poker ambassador and a friend of yours, Doyle Brunson, who announced on Twitter a couple of days ago that he is not going to be back at the Rio next year. I assume that means he won't be playing any events, but he's also told people, and I think he may have mentioned this to you,
a couple of talks with
that, that he is not going to be back for another main event, that this was his last one, that he'll continue playing cash games, but that that is about it. You've known Texas Dolly for a while. What's your reaction to that?
I want to bet he plays. Anybody out there thinks he's not going to play the World Series of Poker, I want to bet that he does. You know, it may just be the 50K horse. It may be some other tournaments and the main event, but I believe Doyle Brunson will play until he's at least 80 years old.
Don't edit out our last segment when I said the same thing. Thank you, Mike. Thank you. Yeah, don't edit the last segment.
You know. Dolly, don't go anywhere, Dolly. Come back with us.
Cool. All right.
Well, good luck with Season 8 of the World Poker Tour. You and Vince are rolling along and giving away a lot of money around the world. Any new tournaments up this year, or are you keeping the same group?
No, actually, we're going to a Hollywood casino. It's on the lake outside Cincinnati, Ohio this year. It's a new event, new stop on the World Poker Tour, closer to your hometown, Dennis.
Absolutely.
You'll be able to make it over there pretty easy, but they tell me it's a lavish place. It's a beautiful facility, and we're excited about it, adding a new event on the World Poker Tour. What? Speaking of events, incidentally, he flew in from L.A. today to play the main event of the World Series of Poker. He got shut out.
Oh,
and
ouch.
That's heartbreaking because that was $10,000 of just going to the pot.
I love
Are
it.
You saying that Vince Van Patten is dead money? Mike Sexton joining us here at the Lumiere Place Final Table at the 2009 World Series of Poker. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, guys. Anytime.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
This part of the show is brought to you by Reactor Watch, the watch that Dennis Phillips has on his wrist right now and during every moment of the World Series of Poker 2009.
I got an unbelievable compliment to Reactor while I was out here. Sat down on the first day of the World Series here, and the dealer was next to me and says, look, I've heard everything about your watch. I need to take a look at this can. Literally. And that's why I took the watch out, and I showed him. He looked at it and said, it's everything everybody said. Everybody is talking about your watch. That's the Reactor watch that I wear. It's the Reactor watch that a lot of other guys do. You need to go check these out. It's a sports watch there is no equal to. Very durable. It's fantastic. I love it.
So you're saying it could take a little bit more than the action of you sitting at a poker table?
They have an ad, I think. Yeah, I'm so active at the poker table. You can tell that. But they have an ad where they have Mike Matheny catching it as a hockey player shoots it across the eye into his glove.
Wow.
And then they hold the watch up, and there's nothing wrong with it.
Nothing wrong with it. Nothing scratched.
Go.
And they got a great guarantee if something ever does go wrong.
Absolutely. Anything unconditional, they will repair it. That's all there is to it. And they repair it immediately and send it back to you. It's not one of these where you lose your watch for 6 or 8 weeks. Like within 48 to 72 hours, it's back.
For more information, go to reactorwatch.com or use the link on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com.
In just 2 short years, World Series of Poker champ Dennis Phillips has earned over $4.5 million because Dennis knows when to hold a great deal. That's why Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room is his game room superstore. Hurry to Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room now for factory closeout deals on poker tables, craps tables, blackjack tables, 3-in-1 casino tables, and accessories. Plus, get Amini's closeout deals on complete game room packages sale priced from just $1,995. Right now, Brunswick Billiard game room suites are thousands off, and American-made pool tables are just $995. Hurry to Amini's now for blowout deals on leather sectionals, area rugs, bars, bar stools, video arcade games, and home theater seating. Hold your deal interest-free with 2-year layaway. So take a tip from Dennis. Get your great deal today at Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room.
Highway 40 in Boone's Crossing in Chesterfield Valley, the home of the Copper Dome Aminis.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Paul Harris and St. Louis's own poker millionaire, Dennis Phillips, on 590 The Fan KFNS.
And welcome back to the 2009 World Series of Poker. Paul Harris with Dennis Phillips and Joe the Poker Coach McGowan. We are covering the main event, the 57th event in this year's WSOP. At every one of these events, they have had a different celebrity or notable poker player get up there and say those classic words, shuffle up and deal, to begin each day's tournament. And on Sunday, when Dennis and Joe played on day 1C, it was Congressman Barney Frank from Massachusetts who got up and not only said the shuffle up and deal, but before he did that, had a few things to say about the future of poker, particularly the legislation that he has been trying to get passed through Congress. After he got down from the stage, I was able to take him aside, and he and I had a little one-on-one talking about exactly that.
Well, in the last days of Republican control, because, Frank, it's become a partisan thing, or they made it one, Senator Bill Frist was thinking about running for president, and he slipped into an overall appropriations bill, a bill that actually had passed the House, to make it illegal to place bets on the Internet, whether it's chance, skill, whatever, or whatever combination. So poker playing on the Internet is now illegal. And what they've done is threatened the banks that if they try to process the credit card payments, they'll be in trouble. And there was recently an outrageous example of heavy-handed, oppressive prosecution in New York over this. I, when that bill first came up, was outraged by it. The notion that we would tell adults what to do with their money with their own time is just crazy. And, you know, it's not as if my colleagues in Congress are such exemplars of how to live your life that we should start setting down these codes for others. So I filed a bill to repeal that. And it didn't get far last time, partly because we knew George Bush wouldn't sign it. But now that we have a president who I think shares our view and personal freedom, I'm chairman of the committee that happens to have the right to vote on this bill. And I plan to push it all the way, and I hope we can get this repealed so adults will be free to engage in an activity that doesn't hurt anybody if they want to.
What's your level of support in Congress?
Well, it's pretty good now in the House. I think I have the majority. It's probably, Frank, as I said, a partisan thing. Now that I've got a Democratic majority, when we voted on it, I got a few Republicans, most of the Democrats. I wish it weren't partisan, but the right wing dictates to the Republican Party, and there are some people who, for some reason, think it violates religion. I don't understand what religious precept it would violate. But if enough people who want to play and who just share our view about freedom were to call their representatives and their senators, we'll win this thing.
Are you a poker player yourself?
I am not, no. I believe in freedom. Frankly, I filed a lot of bills to allow people to do a lot of things. If I did them all myself, I'd be worn out.
Are you? Is this your first time at the World Series?
It is, very much so. And I've worked with the Poker Players Alliance. I have a couple of friends, a former congressman named Tom Downey and Robert Rabin. They're guys who are, you know, people talk about lobbyists. Well, lobbyists can play a very good constructive function. These are guys who helped me do the right thing, in my view. They help follow these things for me, and I work with them. And I'm hoping that we can mobilize through this. As I said, if everybody who's involved here or everybody who thinks the federal government should be rational would write to the U.S. representative and the senators and say, please butt out, and if people want to gamble on the Internet and play poker, it shouldn't be a crime, then we'll win this.
Is there any other law that you know of where the government tells people what they can and can't do with their money? I mean, we can buy as many cars as we want and
well,
as many things on eBay as we want.
Yeah, it looks for me a related one is people want personally to smoke marijuana. They're told they can't do that. But this is the most egregious. You know, if you're hurting somebody, okay. But if you're not hurting anybody, then you shouldn't be involved.
Since this is your first time here at the World Series, when you walked in the doors of the Amazon room and saw all of the activity going on here, what crossed your mind?
That I wish everybody here would write to their congressman. I know it's an annoyance. People don't sign up to become congressional advocates, but sometimes it's important to fight for your freedom if you want to enjoy it.
Absolutely.
That's Congressman Barney Frank of Massachusetts here at the 2009 World Series of Poker on the Lumiere Place Final Table. Now, before we have any comments on that, just a little quick little story for you. While I'm doing that interview with him, we're standing near the ESPN feature table, and the ESPN cameras are there rolling, getting videotape of whoever the players were who were on there, and there is a dolly track that the cameras roll on that was all the way around there. Well, I didn't realize that Congressman Frank and I were standing so close to that dolly track that we nearly got knocked over by the camera as it got pushed around. In fact, while I was asking him one of those questions, just as he finished his answer, I saw this look of terror cross his eyes, because from behind me, that camera was moving along very, very quickly. He grabbed me and shoved me aside, and so I'm here to tell you I've been saved by a United States congressman. By the way, right afterwards, he didn't say, "Are you okay?" And I didn't say, "Are you okay?" We just calmly went on with the conversation and edited that part out from what you just heard. Anyway, I one thing I like about that is that he seems very optimistic about that legislation passing this year, and he's been doing a lot of work with our friends at the Poker Players Alliance, who have actually been doing quite a bit here at the World Series of Poker, and you met with another member of Congress thanks to them, didn't you?
Well, I met with both of them, actually. I was lucky enough to meet both with Barney and also with Robert Menendez. He's a U.S. Senator from New Jersey who is also spearheading some of the bills in there and trying to get this passed to do it. His is more specific. He is trying to actually get just poker, just the internet, the poker, as a game of skill, and getting that eliminated from the rest of the limitations that they have in Congress right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I met both with him and the PPA in private, and I met with Barney Franks also on there. Both awesome people. Senator Menendez has been in there for, I think, 17 years now. And to have him spearheading it and him being a spokesman for the PPA and for the poker players is just phenomenal.
One of the things I really liked about what Congressman Franks said was, even though he's not a poker player, he's in favor of doing this because he's for freedom.
Now, how many times have you seen in a poker room somebody stand up there and give a little speech and everybody ignores it and they're going, people were listening to him and he actually got a round of applause on about half a dozen of his different statements?
Yes, he did.
These were things that struck home and he said them very eloquently.
If you're not a member of the Poker Players Alliance, you can go to their website, ppa.org, or pokerplayersalliance.org, and join up. And if you are a poker player, you want to fight for the game that we all love, it only costs you $20 to become a member. And our thanks to Brian Spadaro and the other guys from the PPA who have been here for the last 6 weeks signing up members. They also have a petition on their website that you can sign, which will be sent off to Congress. And as Congressman Frank said, call your representatives in the United States Congress, in the House and the Senate, and tell them that they should vote for this legislation to overturn the UIGEA, which made a lot of problems for a lot of people who like this game of poker so much.
Yeah, and there's actually a couple of things of note. That petition, who has not been running very long, is now at 260,000 names.
Fantastic.
Unbelievable the response we get. Perhaps these guys in Washington will actually realize just how strong the poker community is and that. The other thing is that I'm actually going to Washington. I've been invited by the PPA to go up there to go talk to other representatives. I'll be talking specifically to representatives from Missouri and Illinois. Those are home states of mine, along with a couple of the senators that are instrumental in this. And that'll be on the 21st of
2 weeks
July.
From today.
2 weeks from today. I will be in Washington doing that. And then that night, I'm going to be privileged enough to host a charity, a USO charity, or help host it, along with several other poker players that the PPA is putting on. So I'm going to be going to Washington. I'm going to be talking to the congressman. I'm going to be playing in a charity thing. And
you're a lobbyist.
I'm now a lobbyist. Wow. Okay, cool. But I am so honored to be able to do that, and I am a proud member of the PPA. Guys, they got my $20. You guys ought to join up.
We're going to take a break here and come back with more of the Lumiere Place Final Table. This is 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com. And don't forget our podcast available on thechipleader.com. This portion of our show tonight is brought to you by PokerStars.net.
Yeah, PokerStars, that's a site that I play on. That is where Peter Eastgate, Joe Hashem, Greg Raymer, Chris Moneymaker, and only about 15 or 2,000 qualifiers that are out here in the World Series playing that play at all the time. Go to PokerStars.net if you want to learn how to play championship poker. This is the place, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
And not just Texas Hold'em.
That's correct. You want Raz, Omaha, Stud, you name it, the game is there.
Which make up many of the events in a 57-event World Series of Poker.
Darn right. There's nothing more fun, I found out, than sitting down and trying to learn how to play Raz at a tournament with guys like this. Wow.
If only you'd spent some more time playing it on PokerStars.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
Now, taking you from the flop to the river, here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris talking poker at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Continuing our coverage of the 2008 World Series of Poker main event, I'm Paul Harris with Dennis Phillips and Joe, the poker coach McGowan. These two guys not only played in the main event, but made it to day 2B, which is tomorrow. Are there any things that come to mind when you think of the play you had on Sunday in day 1C, where, by the way, you ended up at the same table? Are there any particularly memorable hands?
There really was, and it was kind of awesome. We ended up with all the thousands of people around here and the hundreds that were left at that time. We ended up at the same table, which is kind of amazing. I sat down there. Joe had been at the same table the whole time and knew it. I had to make a quick analysis of some of the players, but I had one particular hand that I liked on it. A fairly tight player. I'd only played a couple of hands. I'd been there for maybe half an hour, 40 minutes. Raised preflop on it in mid position. I was in a later position, looked down at a 6-8 of diamonds, and went ahead and smooth called it just to see the flop and see what I had position behind him. I was closing the betting down. It wasn't that expensive a bet. I had the chips in front of me to be able to do that. I was in the high 50s at that time on it. Flop came out a king of spades, nine of clubs, and seven of hearts. And I had the 6-8, so I had the open in. Gentleman made the continuation bet on it, and again, I just smooth called him on that. Turn card was great. I wish it had been low end, which would have hidden a little bit more, but it came on the upper end. Ten of hearts came out there. Put two hearts on it. Gave me the second nut. Somebody with a queen jack would actually be beating me, but I couldn't. No way he's raising preflop with a queen jack the way he was playing.
Okay.
So I was 100% sure that I had the nuts at this time.
And at this point, Dennis, Paul walks by, taps me on the shoulder. He's just doing a drive-by, seeing how we're doing it.
Because I'm playing over in the cash games. I'm coming over to check out how you're doing.
See how we're doing. So I stand up and say, watch this hand.
And I say, I am watching this hand. Dennis is
it. It was a very interesting hand, and it was getting to be some chips.
Yes, it was. Yeah. It was a pretty big pot by the time I got there.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't huge, but it was definitely subsizable for what we've been playing and everything. I'm guessing there was probably, at this time, after the flop, with the basic bet and the continuation, somewhere between $4,500 and $5,000 out there in the pot on that. All righty? The turn card came, again, the 10 of hearts. He checked. Now, again, I'm putting him on ace-king. I really don't know what he had. I ended up not seeing it. I'm putting him on ace-king, so he's got top pair, top kicker. He's feeling fairly confident. But I did smooth call him pre-flop, and I did smooth call him on the flop. So I've got to get something out there. So I bet, you know, in the 60% range of what was out there, I bet $3,500. And he called fairly quickly. So I'm even more confident. The worst hand this guy has is the kings. He could even have pocket aces over there on it.
So, and at this point, how long had you been, I call it my table because I was there all day, how long had you been playing with
us? Not very long at all. I'm guessing, 10 or 15 minutes or something
like
that?
Probably 10 or 15 minutes. I'd been playing with him all day.
Yeah.
And I've seen him slow play aces, and I've seen him play extremely solid. So I have to admit, I'm nervous. So I get up, and I step away from the table. I go to you, Paul.
Yeah, we're standing there talking. We're kind of like doing our only analysis the side.
And I say to you, oh, my goodness. Like, if Dennis has King Jack here, please slow down, because this guy has a hand.
Yeah.
Right, Paul?
The other guy was definitely exuding confidence at this point.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
And from my history with him, I knew he had a hand.
I didn't have the history, but from his posture, from the way he had not played hardly a hand since I've been there, even though he hadn't dealt very many. I mean, I had a read on him as a fairly tight player. I was hoping I wasn't wrong.
And he was a good, he was actually a pretty good player.
Yeah. Okay. Anyhow, it comes a brick on the river. I think it was a four of clubs, some small. I'm sitting over here basically praying anything, something below a six, just get so we don't have to worry about it type deal. And it did. And he checked again. Well, I thought about it and trying to figure out exactly what I can do. And again, there's a decent amount of money in the pot now. There was like 5,000. We put another 7,000. There's about 12,000 in the pot now. I thought half of it, maybe I can get that out of him. So again, I threw the 6,000 out and then just went into the stoic mode. Not trying to tell him anything, not doing anything, put my hands over my mouth and just sat there and played with my chips or, didn't stare at him and that. Guy didn't take long at all. Looked at me, down, grabbed the 6,000, threw it in. I went, no problem. Turned over my 6-8. him and the guy next to him. Now, that was somebody that you recognized and had played with before and everything.
Another young pro.
Another young.
No, probably Corey.
That was Corey.
He was
that
the. Was. He's playing on high stakes poker.
Corey Zeidman.
Right.
Yeah.
Super nice guy. Good player.
Which
also
was perfect for me because he looks at it and goes, "Oh, whatever," right there. Because there's no way he put me on the straight. And the other guy was just shocked, but no way he put me on the straight, which I love because he's one of the better players at the table, obviously, on it. And so that made instantly my reputation went up there, and I knew that then somewhere later in the day I could bluff this sucker and he would lay down on me. That's exactly the first thing
I
thought
of. We're going to have
him on the show.
So anyhow, and the guy didn't show his cards. I don't know what he had. I'm guessing the worst he had was ace-king there. I really think he was solid as a rock.
If he had king-queen, there's no way he quickly calls the river as he did the 6,000 with king-queen.
I agree.
He would have tanked for sure. I'd been playing with him for 8 hours before that. 100% he would have gone.
Well, and then afterwards you told me he slow played aces, so he actually could have had aces again.
He either had aces or ace king.
You know what? You mentioned if he had king queen, he would have thought about that. Tell the story about the king queen that you saw him involved in at that same table.
And actually, that's when he slow played the aces. That is when he slow played the aces. There was another player, and again, my table was a pretty tough table, and a lot of good pros were playing in it. And one of the guys that has made multiple final tables over the years, who's a very good player that I'd never played with. He's sitting 2 seats to my left, and actually 3 seats, I believe. But he's pounding and pounding on me anytime. It was anybody. He's a good player, and he's a great chess player. He gets involved in a hand late, and this is when I have about 50,000. He has about 50,000. So we're the two chip leaders of our individual table, both doing great in chips at this point, really well in chips. But the guy really had a little bit of, I think, of a just a blow-up. I mean, really overplayed the king-queen. Flop came queen high, and the gentleman that was in the 9 seat, which is the person we've been talking about that played Dennis
that we think had
ace-king or might have had aces where you made the straight, he had slow-played his aces and just called pre-flop, and the other guy with the king-queen flop top pair with a king-kicker, he makes a big, big bet. Guy just calls with the aces. Turn, he makes another big, big bet, just calls with the aces. River makes an overbet. Now the guy either can just call. Of course he can fold, but he has aces. I thought he had a set of eights because there was an eight out there. He goes all in. It's 7,000 more to call. Now maybe everybody thinks, you have to call. The pot's too big and all that. And I'm being a little unfair perhaps, but I thought it was a horrible call with the king-queen, for 7,000.
Did he insta-call?
He insta-called.
Ugh.
He insta-called. I mean, maybe it's not horrible because the pot was huge.
But what does he think he can beat there?
I don't know, Queen Jack, I guess. Yeah. He's calling off the guy that's been playing the most solid of everybody, calling off with Queen Jack there and then going all in on the river. I think you try to save that 7,000, 100% your beat. I mean, there's just no way you're going to roll over King Queen there and be good.
Right.
But more than that, even if he threw it away, and everybody's different. People play aggressively in his aggressive style. But after that, he was now short. He went down to like 14, 20,000, whatever he had left. I never heard from him the rest of the day. I mean, he was just waiting to find a big hand and then make a play. He just shut down after that. But it was a horrible, horrible blow-up. And a good tip for our listeners, don't overplay hands and go crazy against solid players that have been playing solid all day long.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no matter whether it was 7,000, 5,000, or whatever, chips are chips. You fight like crazy to get these chips. Don't give them away.
Right. And tournament chips are more valuable. That's what people need to understand. They're more valuable than regular chips. You can't dig back in your pocket and take out more money.
Well, when you guys start up day 2B tomorrow, Dennis, you'll have 62 or so, and Joe, you'll have 82, 83, something like that.
86, 625.
All right.
Approximately.
Who's counting?
Really.
You are. Okay. I wish you the best of luck tomorrow. We will not have a show next week because it's All-Star Night in St. Louis, and there'll be a lot of coverage of that. But we will be back with another episode of the Lumiere Place Final Table 2 weeks from tonight on the 21st of July. We'll probably have some more stories from the main event because you guys are both going to have a nice deep run, and we'll have stories about that and some leftover World Series of Poker stories to share with you as well. Remember, if you've missed any of these shows, you can get the podcast on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. All the links are right there on thechipleader.com. Catch them as they tweet live from the tables. This is 5-9 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com. Thanks for listening.